Welcome to The Modern Anabaptist, a podcast where we talk about contemporary cultures in Anabaptist light. Today on the podcast, we talk about anxiety. When do we feel it, how do we feel it, and what it means for us spiritually. Join us in having the conversations that shape us.
Greetings, everyone. It's been a while. We're just trying to figure out how to start this podcast again because we haven't done that in a while. How are you, Tobin?
Not too bad. I figure this would be the start of season two since we took a little bit of a hiatus so I could get my schoolwork done.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I made it through that. That was, you know, have you ever put on so much work on yourself or you realize it's going to be, you're going to be overworked? And then you just go for it anyways. That was me in September.
That's right.
So I made it through. I almost didn't make it, but I did. So
that's good. That's good. And this semester, you have less of a load, I guess, eh?
Yeah, I learned my lesson from last semester going into it. And I realized, you know what, three classes is a little too intense right now with practicum, which is basically a full-time job.
Yeah.
So just going down to just practicum and one other course is basically my max.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I started to sacrifice the quality of even work at church that I was doing, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. Have you gotten COVID yet?
Nope.
No?
Have you?
No, I have not yet.
But I swear, every person I know within the past 2 weeks have now gotten, like, Omicron.
That's right.
Or some variant.
That's right. It seems inevitable at this point in our lives.
It seems very inevitable.
Yeah.
And just for our listeners, right now, the province we're in is basically just letting it run rampant.
That's right.
Without any restrictions.
Yeah.
And for people like my wife, it's very frustrating for her. Because she's immunocompromised, and so there's a lot of anxiety and fear around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you? How have you been these past couple of months?
Been all right. I got started a new job, and I think we've covered that already. And so, you know, just trying to learn the ropes of that, a little bit of traveling, a little bit of this, a little bit of being stuck at Winnipeg due to a new COVID variant, all sort of thrown together. And yeah, just living a family life and kind of enjoying having a job that's more of a 9-to-5 type of deal rather than meetings and lots of evening time. So, but enjoying that, and I have really not been feeling too jealous of pastors these days as they're trying to figure out new kind of COVID restrictions and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's been a good few months. I've really been enjoying my life.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's tricky for us because we don't necessarily have the government support that we would need to back up with our congregation, but numbers wise and just what we've done in the past, we have to assess the situation and go, you know what, like, for the health of our congregation, this is kind of the best option we have right now. So for us, we're not doing any in-person stuff until February at least.
Yeah, and it's partly also your own health and safety, right? But I think a lot of pastors are receiving significant pushback or have been. And so it's just another level of tiredness, maybe, and maybe anxiety. Just from what I'm hearing is, you know, there was just this general sense of, oh, here we go again. And
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, you'd think after 2.5, has it been two years-ish now?
It's going to be 2 years in March, at least here in Winnipeg, right?
After 2 years... You'd think people would have gotten past the fatigue and just been like, this is life now. This is kind of...
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just the vitriol has just amped up quite considerably. And perhaps we're due for a good rearranging of the deck chairs. And, you know, maybe people need to find new church homes that more align with their views and the places they want to be. And if they can't manage to have healthy boundaries with church members that don't see it in the same way, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of finding churches during pandemic and rearranging, how has your search been going?
Not great, but I mean, I think that's kind of the issue, right? So I think that's just the times we're living. I have children, and just as we were kind of ready to start attending churches in person, one child got a cold, and the next child got a cold, and us adults got a cold, and by the time December rolled around, the colds were gone. And it was a bit of a weird cold that symptoms kept going for a good month. So by the time everything was done, churches were locked down again and going online. And yeah.
It's really not going well for you then.
You know, the same issues that have presented themselves before, I think churches have still not, because churches have so kind of lived into that one reality of doing online that they haven't really paid much attention to whether that's been working or whether it's good or whether it's inclusive or not. And so, you know, we're all just waiting for a time where COVID is done. And so it's kind of like everybody's just focusing on their own congregations, I think, mostly, and their own congregants, and not so much worried about what that looks like to new people. I've mentioned that before on this podcast, but I think that every time we go back to online-only services, that just resurfaces in a way that becomes more clear again. Yeah.
Just as you were talking there, you were talking about, we keep talking about COVID as if it's going to be over. And what that just, the thought popped in my head there of, yeah. Well, we have this mentality of whatever is next is going to be better than right now. So I wonder, so this is like a half-formed thought, and I'm going to edit this down in my editing. But why do you think we desire that what's next instead of just living in the moment?
And I think this is going to neatly segue kind of, I think, into our talk about anxiety too, because I actually think it is a thought fueled by anxiety. And it's that anxiety that tells you that right now we're not doing well, right? I think if you're looking at the news, if you're looking at what's going on in this world, everything is telling us that we are not in a good space right now. And our immediate response to that is, how do we get to the good space? And that's what we're looking forward to. That's what we're planning for. That's what we're thinking about. And we kind of miss the space that we're being in right now. But I think, and so I think in some ways it's a response to that anxiety, right? And I'm not just talking about COVID, it's everything, right? I mean, there's climate anxiety out there, there's political instability, there's potentially a war starting in Europe. I mean, there is no good news stories really in the news, and actually the news cycle is fed by bad news stories anyways, and by creating anxiety, and so, because it sells. And so I think I would probably say we have a hard time staying in the present because we're so anxious that the present is a really dangerous place.
Yeah. And I mean, we can say the present is a very dangerous place, but the present now is far safer than the present of 10 years or 20 or 30 or even 100 years ago.
Well, that exactly. And I was reading some comments that kind of went through popular culture of the 20th century, and some of the singing and some of this, so some of the lyrics of songs and some of the kind of things that were expressed in art. And it seems like almost every generation has gone through these kind of, you know, the present is a really dangerous moment. And some moments were truly dangerous. I mean, somebody who's kind of an adult during the Second World War or First World War is pretty much right. Yeah, these are dangerous moments. And in between there, you have the Great Depression in the United States. They are dangerous moments. But in some ways, those dangerous moments have also have fueled kind of new discoveries and new types of lives. I'm not condoning war by any sort of means. But
no,
but,
I think that would go against our entire Anabaptist philosophy.
That's exactly it. But I think we just have to acknowledge what it does do in our societies, too. Right. And so,
yeah.
So you kind of have to weigh that a little bit and kind of wonder what is the potential that this moment holds for our future, not just by getting over this moment, but also what's the deeper potential in this moment that if used right, can, you know, be productive in our future.
Yeah. And I think part of this getting over it too is this longing for either like a past reality,
mm-hmm.
or an alternate reality that we kind of imagine to be perfect.
This is exactly it, right? Except we know that our brains are just very bad at remembering things.
Yeah.
And oftentimes tell us different stories of what the past is than the past actually was. In many ways, an idealized version of the past, right? Life was so much better. Was it so much better 3 years ago? Who knows? You know?
Yeah. Was last Christmas always just so much better than this Christmas?
Well, that's exactly it.
Because we noticed that with the holidays too, especially like, I mean, we just got over Christmas, so I won't talk about it too much.
Right.
But a lot of those Hallmark movies are all about odes to Christmases past.
That's right.
Never about kind of the present or the future.
Yeah, and retelling of our own stories or of our own memories, while it's good and it's healthy, right? We just have to know they're always unreliable narrators that tell us that story. Because our brains are just not wired to tell us facts. They are wired to deal with our feelings at the same time, and it just comes out different, right?
Yeah, well, our brains are also machines of interpretations, right?
That's exactly it.
So we constantly construct the reality around us.
That's right.
And place them within the frameworks of our narratives.
Which also then can go into a conversation at some other point about what truth is, right? But I think we see that even in our world now, that there seems to be no room for an actual objective truth, right? Everybody's constructing their own realities based on how they need to survive a dangerous moment. And it kind of brings up, and this is why I kind of told you maybe we should talk about anxiety today, because I just see it everywhere. I see it both in the pro-vax and in the anti-vax community. I see it in the huge climate change anxiety built into our lives at the moment, and we're just really, really stressed out. So I thought we should talk about anxiety. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. So what have you kind of noticed about a common thread about all these anxieties or anxiety in general? What have you kind of meditated or made some recent?
Two things I've noticed. And so these are in two different areas. I think COVID related. I think most people aren't able to express their anxiety or why they're anxious or where that anxiety is coming from. If I hope I'm expressing myself correctly there, but it's just, you can see the way we're reacting to others, that we're not necessarily in a healthy space. In the whole climate change conversation, it's almost become, at least how I perceive it, it's almost become a mantle of I'm really working for climate change because I'm anxious. And so you have to kind of verbalize that anxiety, and it's almost like a trophy a little bit. Perhaps I'm wrong, I'm a cynic, I know that. But it's kind of becomes this, this thing. It's like, yes, I'm anxious, and that's why I'm doing this. To the point where some of the things that I see described online of how people are feeling and how that anxiety is kind of produced and or shows up as symptoms, I'm like, whoa, this is not just a general kind of, hey, I'm anxious. These are some real signs of like where counselors such as yours might say, hey, you know, we're coming close to a diagnosis here of something that needs to be addressed. So that's kind of got me into the space of, okay, what are we doing with anxiety, and what is a healthy response, and what are healthy ways to use anxiety or to deal with anxiety, and what are unhealthy ways?
Yeah, well, I mean, in the past number of years, climate anxiety has definitely become more and more prevalent within our culture and kind of what we've been seeing. Still, immediately, everything is still kind of COVID related, if that makes sense. Like, COVID has interrupted my life. Now I have to kind of renegotiate what that means.
Yeah.
Figuring out the fallout from that.
Right.
But one of the next big thing that's that's popping up now is this climate anxiety and this environmental crisis. And that's reflective of the world we live in. We do live in a world that is on fire, quote unquote, to Bill Nye.
That's
like,
right.
And it's not like a quick thing. And I think part of the problem of this is that we can't actually, there's no one person that can flip a switch to fix it, right? Like, this isn't an individual problem. I'm a self-diagnosed hypochondriac, right? So my anxieties tend to also issue not towards, or one of them would be towards my own health and my own well-being, right? And so I notice my anxiety, but then I also then have to like, okay, now is not the time to act on this. I have to de-escalate or re-regulate myself, and then I can go actually do something about it. Yeah, it's one of those things where I think we do the best we can in the moment, yeah. but then we also have to just live and let live a little bit.
Yeah, and so that's kind of the thing, right? We've talked a little bit about climate anxiety before. But I was wondering, maybe you can just give us a working definition of anxiety. What is anxiety? What does it look like to be anxious? You know, beyond just, we're all anxious here or there, right? But like, what does it look like when perhaps this results in unhealthy symptoms or unhealthy behavior or something like that, unhealthy way of living?
Well, okay. So even prior to the COVID-19 pandemic here, anxieties are really one of the most widespread disorders in the Western world. It is estimated somewhere between 10 to 30% will actually suffer from debilitating anxiety at some point in their lives. Anxiety itself, while a natural response to the environment, is usually different from anxiety as we consider it a disorder. So while we may feel anxious towards eating pink ground beef, as we remember getting food poisoning the last time we ate it, or we feel anxious when we're driving in a winter storm without snow tires, especially when the visibility is less than ideal. So even within those two examples, anxiety serves as kind of a motivational tool that serves the individual to mitigate the risk of engaging in those activities. Anxiety may cause us to cook the meat until it's brown, or change our tires so that our car can suit the weather, or even postpone our plans for the day to avoid crashing into the ditch. But anxiety really becomes problematic when it's no longer relieved by the behavior, or when the relieving behavior becomes disproportionate to the environment. In other words, if the anxiety towards potentially uncooked meat leads us to not eating the meal or never stepping in the car or ever driving again, we can tell that these disproportionate responses indicate the presence of a disorder. Like DSM-5 wise, though, if you want an exact definition, the DSM-5 says there's like three different categories of anxiety disorders. So there's anxiety disorder, obsessive compulsive disorders, and trauma-related disorders, which would be post-traumatic. So in each of these instances, they share similarities, but there are differences. So in order to classify with an anxiety disorder, though, if that's what you're going for, you need to have excessive and unrealistic worry spanning more than 6 months, accompanied by either motor tension, restlessness, tiredness, heart palpitations, shortness of breath, trouble swallowing, nausea, feelings of being on edge, decreased concentrations and difficulty falling asleep, and even general irritability. But our bodies themselves respond to stress in a couple of ways, the stress of anxiety. So we can respond to the stress by either doing a fight, a flight, a freeze response. So a flight response is anything where you try and get away from the feeling. A freeze is where you just kind of like stand still, and fight is where you get angry and you kind of try and fight back.
Yeah. All right. So this is very interesting to me. I hope I can remember where I want to go here, because I have two questions that immediately come up in my mind as you talk about this. So I'm trying to, once again, think in those two categories, COVID, and I wish we could be done talking about COVID, but we can't be. So COVID and climate change, those are two ways where I kind of see anxiety impacting. So I've thought several times now already that the way we react, most of us have reacted to COVID, is in one of those categories that you've mentioned, fight, freeze.
Yep. Fight, flight, freeze. And there's a whole lot of other responses.
Yeah, for sure. And so I'm wondering where that becomes maladaptive too, right? And so the way I've at least processed it in my mind, and I think I've participated in that too, right? I probably will have gone to the fight part. You know, I said, we're going to really lean into these restrictions. We're going to make sure, I would have been an advocate for a zero COVID strategy. I was very picky on who I was seeing in the beginning. Now in retrospect, as Omicron is going wild, it kind of feels like, why did I even do this? Because it was useless. You know, we're at the spot where I'm going to get COVID anyways, because my kids are back in school, you know, so I'm just waiting to get COVID. So that was my response, was fight, you know, where I feel like, especially in the anti-COVID and then anti-vax crowd, I've always felt that was a bit of a flight flight reflex, even though it looked like fight, because it was kind of, COVID is not bad. COVID is a flu. We just need to ignore it and it'll go away. We just need to keep living our lives. We can't, you know, the economy becomes the person that has to be saved over all other people. Maybe I'm wrong. It just felt like that was a little bit of this, like, I don't want to hear any of the bad news. I can't hear them. I need to run away from them. I need to pretend that life is normal. And vaccines, of course, are the ultimate acknowledgement that something is not right and that there needs to be a cure. I could be wrong about that, but that's how I've always felt that has gone.
I think that's taking, like, the body responses to, like, a whole nother, like, whole nother level.
Yeah.
But let's talk about that fear, though, that of anxiety, right?
Yeah.
Because anxiety manifests a lot of the time within not just the body, but also in your thoughts, your cognitions.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
So my own ways, which I've discovered within myself, is I do a lot of what's called catastrophic thinking, where your one thought follows up with another thought and you just keep spiraling down.
Right.
So you fail your test.
Yeah.
Right. And then, that means I'm going to fail the course, which means I'm going to fail my degree,
right,
which means I won't get a job.
Right.
Which means I won't have enough money to financially support myself, which means I'm going to become homeless, which means I'm going to die.
Right. Right.
Right.
Right.
And so you notice how one little mountain or one little molehill becomes a huge mountain.
Right.
So I'm wondering if you experienced that a little bit, reflecting on your own experience with thinking about getting COVID. Did you notice catastrophic, or was it something else?
Yeah. I mean, you and I are probably a little bit alike in the whole hypochondriac department. And so I'm a bit of a germaphobe in that sense. And I actually don't mind necessarily if I get sick. What I don't like is not knowing what it is. It's once you're sick, you deal with it. But not knowing when you will get sick or how you get sick or what this will look like. So if I know I'm getting a cold, I know what a cold will look like. I know how I go when it gets bad, and I know how I go when it stays, you know, clears up pretty quickly. The problem that I always felt with COVID, and that's why I was trying to protect myself and my family, is I just didn't know where it could go. Statistically, I thought I would be pretty safe, but you just never know. And so to me, it was a part, and it was rational in that sense, right? Because we're trying to protect our health system, we're trying to do this. To me, I think oftentimes the way I react to anxiety is I try to rationalize my way through it. Where it spirals is often on health issues, and especially health issues of my family, right? But even then, that is a rational kind of, you know, you go through the symptoms and you're thinking this through and this through and this through. And I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of like how we to mentally interrupt ourselves is with that rationality, right? Because, you know, working through it, you go, okay, what's the actual likelihood that this is going to result in the end of the universe? And it's pretty
low. Sure. And the likelihood for most of us, and this is not to be glib about those who have passed away, because this has also been seized by those anti-lockdown, anti-vaxxer kind of groups and say, oh, only 2% of people die. Well, any percentage of people that die is never enough. It's never not enough. I don't know what words to use there. But
I also think we have this false security in how much we can control about our own future.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the anxiety comes from. Like, we can't control when we die.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just going to happen. Whether or not I exercise or not, it will, like, it'll percentage-wise make a difference on my likelihoods.
That's right.
But there's no guarantees.
So anyways, I think, to me, looking back, I think we've all responded to COVID a little bit out of anxiety, right? None of our responses have been fully 100% healthy responses. And I think that's where so I'm trying to think about what are the maladaptive ways that
that we can have these, what are the irrational thoughts that we can have?
Yeah, or where is perhaps the root of some of our discord in this world that we haven't dealt with our anxiety well around COVID, you know? Like, I mean, people keep saying this, and I know they're right. They say communities are being destroyed, families are being destroyed. I know that's right. I think that's partially because we keep acting out of our anxious irrationality. And I'm not trying to be mean well, here, but we haven't found a place of healthiness in order to actually move forward in any shape or form.
Well, it's one of those scenarios, right, where if your environment isn't contributing to like your emotional regulation or your ability to think rationally, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's hard to tell if you are or not. I mean, that's part of why we have a community, is so we can bounce ideas off of each other, right?
Right.
And say, hey, am I actually being rational right now, or am I being irrational?
But we're not doing that.
But we're not necessarily doing that, because
we're using our community to say, hey, you either believe my way or I can't be in community with you, because I need you to tell me that I'm rational. You don't get to tell me I'm irrational.
Yeah. Well, and that turns into black and white thinking, which is another anxiety response.
Right.
Right. Either it's one way, or it's either all or nothing.
Right. Right. Right.
There's no kind of in the middle.
Right.
And then like all of these sorts of things kind of contribute within each other.
Right.
Like even so then, you kind of touched on catastrophization, right? Like COVID hit. Oh, if we don't have Sunday one Sunday, it's the end of the world. We're not going to have Sundays ever again.
That's right.
Church will come back. Sundays ain't going nowhere. It's real.
No, exactly. In many ways, church has thrived, just in a different way. So, yeah. So that was my one thought. So I think that's interesting. So when people then say, how can we kind of heal our families or our communities? I don't know if we'll be able to heal without being able to come back to a place where we can disagree in healthy ways, but where we can also challenge each other to speak and think out of healthy patterns, and maybe not out of unhealthy patterns of anxiety. I don't know if you agree with that or not. You can feel free to disagree with that.
I think one of the biggest reasons why we feel so anxious nowadays is because of just like our work schedule and the amount of stress that is demanded and is put on us at all times.
Yeah.
Like, especially now, like I basically use Christmas to just tune out. I put my phone just on the side. I would still check my emails every once in a while, but I would like not let it bother me, if that made sense.
Right.
So essentially I disconnected from all the demands, and that really did wonders for my rationality.
Yeah. Right.
And returning to that state of what things are, life is going to be okay.
Right. Right.
So I do think, well, and I mean, it's partly because survival in this world is you're required to have multiple jobs to actually get ahead, or there's this pressure to feel like you need to get ahead in a material way.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you're failing. And that ties into, I guess, prosperity gospel stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a side note, maybe. Maybe we need to talk about what rationality is. Because I think sometimes what we think about rationality is the same as logic or factual information. I'm not sure we're talking about that. maybe we are, but I would say I've seen some pretty irrational responses. Let's talk about COVID for a second here. Again, I've seen some pretty irrational responses by the pro-vax crowd to the anti-vax crowd that mostly, though, is based on using logic and facts. But their responses are pretty irrational. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've seen that. I mean, part of the definition of rationality is that it is based on logic or correctly responding within reason to your environment, right? So taking in the knowledge around you and responding to it appropriately, right?
Yeah.
And so that disproportionate response can really, it's irregardless of your political spectrum.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I can, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, so we're going through an environmental crisis. I could go burn down car lots and be like, no one gets cars anymore. But that's irrational.
But somebody could come up to you and say, here's, I've put together a slide deck with the right graphs that show that if we burn just enough Kardex, we will save the world by getting our right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they would claim rationality. The they in this, of course, being fictitious because nobody's doing that at the moment, but they would claim rationality to that, right?
And I think it's hard to really claim rationality in the moment.
That's right.
It's a lot easier to kind of judge the rationality after the fact, after you.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to just... One of the things I've started to do is just not respond to like an email right off the bat. Just kind of give it like 24 hours to like... marinate.
And I think that's a smart thing. And so for me, I guess to me, the idea of rational responses or rational reactions is somehow the idea of, it's a word that everybody hates these days, but maybe moderation or calibration. Moderation people hate because anything that's moderate is seen as bad. But this idea that rationality is not just this modern concept of empiricism. It's part... Rationality is also driven by your context, by your community, by the people that speak into your life, by the things you listen to. So it's not just you as a being aren't just a rational being on your own, right? And so that's why I kind of got a little worried about that irrational, because... You know, technically somebody who knows all the numbers about COVID and every, you know, they spend their whole day just looking at the graphs, that could be an irrational way of dealing with their anxiety too, right? It could become an unmoderated way that, you know.
Yeah, and so that's like being rational is a process, right? It's not dependent on the information, because... Like, if you look at the information as being static across the board, we all have relatively the same amount of information. But our behaviors are determined on how we are rationalizing it differently.
That was just a thought, because I was wondering if there's such a thing as an objective rational response. And I think some of it is always subjectivized based on who we are and based how we've grown up and based on past trauma and present realities and all that kind of stuff, just mixing back into what a rational response looks like, right?
Yeah, and
Yeah.
And like I said at the beginning, our brain is consistently constructing the world around us.
Yeah. So then climate change.
You really like this topic.
Yeah.
But it's all good.
It's all good. Yeah. It's just because that seems so prevalent, at least in some of my communities. Maybe it's just on the feeds that I have. It's kind of the same actually with political opinions, but it's the way I see anxiety there is the world is burning down and we need to act now. And on one hand, it is burning now and we need to act now. On the other hand, when this comes to your all-consuming thought, I just see that anxiety. You know, somebody posted, I can't sleep, I can't, you know, I have a hard time eating, I'm struggling, you know, and I need to do something about it. And so part of my immediate response was, but if you're doing something about it before, first of all, addressing anxiety, aren't your responses, as well-meant as they are, aren't they unhealthy responses, because they're not dealing with the root cause of why you're so anxious.
What I suspect, based on what you're telling me, and this is just kind of the thought that's popped in my mind, it may or may not be true, but when you feel this level of anxiety towards one thing, you're likely also going to be feeling it towards another thing. So once you solve the problem of climate change, let's say you wave that magic wand, you likely are still going to be holding on to a level of anxiety.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I just, like, based on what you're anxieties can be created internally or like externally from the environment or reinforced. And so for some of us, for me, very much the climate anxiety is just a result of, the world is burning down. But I don't carry that around with me 24 hours.
That's right.
It's going to be going into my next card decision, because I'm going to probably buy electric.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? So it informs our little choices and our big choices, but it can become these anxieties can become what gives you life. right? They can become your reason for being while you're not even noticing it.
I don't think they give you life. That's the I think they deceive you as if it is giving you life, but it's really sapping the life from you.
Oh, for sure. But it's a parasitic relationship. Parasitic, maybe not parasitic, but in the sense that it becomes so much part of you that giving that up seems like losing life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's just it, right? So like a fire will burn, but like what it burns is the big thing. So if you keep feeding it and you just need more and more fire, then eventually you're without the structure around you, right? I'll tie that in with the cortisol levels, right? So cortisol is your stress hormone. It is the one that is sent into your bloodstream, but it's basically like nitrous for your body. It kicks it into high gear, but in the long term it's corrosive.
And so the likening there is that...
Is it that the longer you hold on to this, the more damage you're actually
so
doing.
So how do you move on? So now talk to me as a counselor. How do you help, or as an aspiring counselor? No, you're a counselor now. You're doing your practice.
I'm going to still say student. I'm still a student counselor. I'm under supervision. I'm still figuring out the ropes. I'm not an expert in any one thing.
Sure. But how do you help someone... develop healthy ways of responding to anxiety when it becomes to this, and I'm seeing this, I'm not just talking about one person, I'm seeing this, I think, on a regular basis, especially for our younger people, this climate anxiety that seems to be taking over everything else in their lives. How do you help someone change that? I don't want to use the word healing, because I'm not sure we all use that word in the same way. But yeah, how can you become healthy? Sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna talk from a Christian counseling perspective for a second. And I think like the big thing in counseling right now is mindfulness, especially in CBT, where you kind of go, you basically reattune your body. You do deep breathing exercises. You ground yourselves. You go through your senses. You focus on each one in particular. And that kind of works to like ground yourself back in reality rather than letting your thoughts spiral. But from a Christian perspective, I think we also do that when we go into prayer, if that makes sense. There's something about truly giving your anxiety to God, or saying, this is, you know what, this isn't within my power. This is for you to do, to work with, or to deal with how you are, and really give me that peace to give this up, to surrender.
Yeah, right. What if you don't want to pray then? Sorry, I'm playing devil's advocate here. What if instead I just want to pray that God uses me to change things? I don't actually want to give up my anxiety.
Well, then I'm gonna fight you again. I don't think you're truly understanding prayer.
Yeah,
like prayer isn't about getting what you want necessarily. It's about opening your heart to God.
Say more. I like it.
I was thinking, this is one. I was doing puppet shows for the church, and this was one that I recently did one on, and it was the story of Samuel, right? So
right.
So it was First Samuel, it's First Samuel, whatever, where in those days,
yeah.
Samuel, or people didn't hear the voice of God, right? They were kind of doing their own shtick, and it was really just Samuel sleep, almost falling asleep,
right?
How I imagine likely opening his heart up where he could actually hear the word of God.
Yeah.
Right. So God came to him. It's not that he went and sought out God necessarily. Maybe you can think of a better one. That's just...
No, it makes sense. I think that's why I was saying I wasn't necessarily disagreeing with you as much as speaking as a devil's advocate. And I think there could be a longer conversation like we could have about prayer. But I think sometimes in some of our communities, we have seen prayer, rightly so, as a tool. As a tool also to speak truth to power, right? And to affect change in this world. And so I think where I sometimes see these kind of things collide, and this is, I'm having a really hard time explaining it, but I think for a lot of us, we don't actually want to have a conversation with God about whether I need to give up this anxiety, because we think we are rightfully anxious. So we're not asking God to solve our anxiety. We were asking God to solve the problem that we think caused our anxiety to begin with. right? So you have rightly kind of challenged us here to say that most likely we're not just anxious about one thing, we're anxious about several things. And if we solve that one thing that we think made us anxious, we're just going to find another thing that is making us anxious. And so your challenge, of course, is to say, actually, the first step in that prayer is to say, do I need to give this up? Before we go into the part of the prayer where we're asking God to just not change myself, but also change this world, right?
Yeah, and even when we're you know, praying for God to change the world, we're still kind of surrendering, saying,
yeah,
you know what, this isn't in my control. There is nothing I can do that is going to change
this, right? Yeah.
And I think that even comes down to, ties in with our faith as well. There's nothing we can do to earn our salvation, mm-hmm. and there's nothing we can do to really lose
right.
it.
Right. Yeah. But Tobin, as we're kind of coming to an end, I think what we could talk about next time, because I think we've tangentially gotten to this a couple times, next time we could talk about miracles.
Ooh, okay. I'll have to start doing research into miracles, because that's going to be a very fascinating topic.
Yeah, and so I think we can address that from a multitude of levels, but we can talk about miracles. I think that'd be fascinating, because it kind of does address a little bit into this whole dying, fear of dying thing, and how God addresses our health. So I think we can talk about that. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. Thank you for joining us on this return to the Modern Anabaptist. The Lord willing, we will be working to maintain a bi-weekly schedule of release for the upcoming season. We would love to hear from you. Please email us at conversations@shapeus.gmail.com with any questions, concerns, or topic ideas you may have. You can also find us on Twitter and Reddit @Modern Anabaptist. Until next time, peace be with you.